The date is April 12th, 2007, and we're at the University of Victoria. My name is Jessica Wood, and I'm doing an interview with Victor Flett. Hi, Victor.
Hi. Hi, Jessica.
There's that there for you. Thank you for coming today.
You're very welcome.
Can you give me your full name and retiring rank, please?
Victor Charles Robert Flett. I go by the middle initial C. And what else was it you wanted?
What was your military rank?
Oh, I was a petty officer first class in the Navy when I got out in 1984.
How long did you serve?
Almost 33 years.
So when did you enlist?
December 28th, 1951.
Okay. And you were enlisted in the Navy?
Yes.
Where did you do training?
I joined up in Winnipeg, HMCS Chippewa, and did my basic training in HMCS Cornwallis in Nova Scotia, near Digby, Nova Scotia. It's no longer a Navy base. They dismantled it. From there, I got posted to a cruiser on the East Coast, HMCS Quebec, for further training as a seaman. And I made two trips to England, Scotland, and Norway, and in about 4 months, about 5 months training at sea, and then I got posted to the West Coast, at which time I took a course in sonar. My basic introduction to a trade in the Navy, sonar, and that was about 6 months, 8 months long, and it wouldn't have been that long, but 5 months long. And then I was slated to be posted to a ship, and all the fellows that I was on course with at that time volunteered to go to Korea, which is what I had joined the Navy to do anyway. As soon as we finished our course, we went aboard. We were posted to HMCS Crusader, which had just come back from a tour of duty in Korea. It was going to get a refit, and then we would be going back to Korea with it. And I can't remember what month it was, but we were already working up, almost ready to go to Korea and leave for Korea when they had a truce in Korea. And we thought, wow, we beat the bullet there. But it turned out we still had to go. And we were given the option, we could go or we could not go if we wanted to. And only one of the crew decided he didn't want to go, and he had a good reason. But everybody that was on the ship volunteered. They said they went. We had a marvelous ship's company. It was a World War II destroyer, but it was a very, very efficient, high-performance destroyer. We really were challenged to man the ship. It was that high performance. I felt I was really well trained. In basic training and my seamanship training, I thought I got excellent training. And I enjoyed the tour. The tour was 10 and a half months from the time we left till we got home. And it was like about a 3 month. It went so fast. And it was very challenging, but enjoyable. And in the meantime, when I finished my basic training, I had been engaged to get married. And so when I got home on my first leave, I got married in June 1951. And when I was away in Korea, I had a baby daughter born December 28th, 1953, on the day that I joined the Navy. You know, like I joined on the 28th of December. My first daughter was born on the 28th of December. the highlight, I guess, of my tour of duty in Korea was, serving with NATO forces. There were a lot of NATO ships, United Nations ships over there. Not NATO, United Nations ships. We served with many of them, and we more than held our own in naval maneuvers and, showing our stuff. I guess the highlight of my experience was the good training I had and the pride that I had in my ship and serving. And then the highlight of my trip was coming home and meeting my firstborn for the first time.
What was basic training like for you?
I was late joining the Navy. I joined when I was almost 23, and I had spent about 10 years on civilian street as employed, working for a living, and so I was quite mature as a new recruit in the Navy. But from my family background, with my brothers and my father and my grandfather being military, I was determined that I was going to try to do my best. So I give it all my best effort, and I enjoyed it. I had to learn a total new way of life. Even terminology. You had to learn naval terminology, which was interesting and challenging. I thought the basic training, both on shore and at sea, was marvelous, challenging, and what else?
You said your grandfather and your brothers and your uncle had all enlisted before you?
Yes.
Can you tell me a bit about that?
When we were growing up as children, before the war, we were all aware of our grandfather who was killed in the war at Vimy Ridge. My grandmother, who was his widow, when my mother passed away when I was 3 years old, I was the youngest of five. And my grandmother adopted us all. She didn't adopt us, she just took us all and began to raise us in her home on my grandfather's land. And we learned about our grandfather giving his life, and my father, who also had served in World War I. And so when we would visit our cemetery to see our ancestors' graves, we would miss our grandfather. So that was always prevalent in my mind. And I guess it was for all of us. My brothers were eager to join as soon as they became of age, to join the Army during World War II. They didn't come of age right away. It was the latter part of World War II. They came of age and joined up and were soon overseas. We're quite close, brothers, and so I was
very... Four brothers?
Four brothers, three brothers, I was proud of what they were doing, and I know they were inspired by our grandfather. And my father. My oldest brother ran away from home at about age 15, and he took up, he went on the Great Lakes as an engineer, and lived his life more or less in Ontario. As a marine engineer on the Great Lake. His job was important to the war effort, and he was urged not to join the military because he was already serving an urgent job for the war effort. But I'm sure he would have, if that hadn't happened, he would have probably joined the Navy as an engineer. I had cousins, all influenced by their grandfather, same as us. There was five. There was four cousins that also served in World War II and the Korea in Korea.
What was your brother's name that you just mentioned who worked as a marine engineer?
Andrew.
Andrew Flett?
Yeah.
Do you remember your cousins' names?
Their names were Stranger. The oldest was Leslie. And he was a prisoner of war. He was captured at Ortona. And served the rest of the war in a prison camp.
Okay.
And the second one was Melvin, Stranger, World War II, artillery. He came back from the war. The third one was David Stranger. He was in the Navy. And he served Korea as well. After I went, we were in the Navy more or less together, but we weren't on the same ships. So. And then there was Jim, who was in the Navy, but he didn't stay any. Did 5 years. And
So there, are these all from the same nation as you? You're Cree?
Yeah.
And they all came from the same area?
No, they were from Hodgson, Manitoba, the Peguis First Nation. And you got my uncle, remember I mentioned my uncle, Joe, who was in the same household as me.
So he was a Flet as well?
No, his name was Stranger.
Stranger.
Like my grandmother's name was Stranger.
Okay.
So Joe was her youngest son.
Did you join with anybody in particular when you were motivated to join?
I had a couple of friends that we all decided we were going to go and join the army. But I was not thoroughly convinced that I wanted to be in the army. I thought about it and I thought I would like to have my 3 hot squares a day rather than eating out of a tin can in a trench somewhere. So we all did our medicals, and this was about just before I joined the Navy. We were all selected to go into the Army, and we were to come to Winnipeg to get sworn in on a Saturday morning. And so when we arrived there, there was maybe a dozen of us. And they were taking two at a time to go and get sworn in. And it just so happened I was the odd man sitting on the bench, the last one to go up, which meant I would have gone by myself, you know, instead of with pairs. And so my friends went and gave me a little bit more time to think about it, and I decided that it changed my mind. So I went out the door. But in about 3 months, I found myself in a Navy recruiting and doing a medical to join the Navy, and I went through with it this time. But the reason I joined was that I was patriotic, and I was aware of my family, how they contributed. But I was going with a beautiful young woman at the time, and we had been going together about 3 years or so. We weren't getting along. So we broke up, and things were really not going well for us. So I thought, I don't want to be around here. We're not going to be going with her. So I decided to go with my friends and join up. And as soon as she found out I was in the Navy, we got back together again, got engaged. We got married when I came home on leave. So I have a number of reasons.
Sounds like a family history, a little bit of friends, loneliness.
Yeah. My friends were in Korea. They were there before me. They were there during the war. And they were in action. But I arrived after, you know, after the fact. And I'm still, I looked them up. Some of them aren't here anymore, passed on. But they're from my hometown, and I knew them well.
What was it like in Korea when you got there?
For the Navy, we only had 3 destroyers there at any one time. And when we were there, there were 2 West Coast destroyers and one East Coast destroyer. And we had a role to play because it was a truce. We would get assigned to go on patrol off the west coast of Korea and support minesweepers that were minesweeping after the war, cleaning up the mines. So the South Korean Navy had minesweepers, and that was their role, was sweeping mines, and they needed protection from air attack or any kind of an attack. So they always had a destroyer with them, and so we would get assigned to go and be with those minesweepers every so often. We would be on patrol for two weeks at a time, but then we would get detached to, you know, go we would be limited by the amount of fresh water we could carry and food and stuff. So we would have to go and get fuel and stuff. So while we weren't on patrol, we would either be exercising with United Nations forces, or we would be detached to go and do a port visit. And we did a number of port visits in Japan, in Okinawa, and Hong Kong. So it was interesting, when we weren't deployed, we had some interesting port visits, yeah, which we appreciated.
What do you remember about Hong Kong?
Busy, 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 crowded. Very, very interesting commerce like you wouldn't believe. Shopping like nowhere else in this world. And really interesting. We had a force there during the war, and they were taken prisoner there. And when we were there, we would form up a guard of honor, and we would go and lay a wreath at the Hong Kong cemetery where many of our Winnipeg Grenadiers that had fallen are buried there. We did the same thing in Yokohama. We formed of the three ships that were there, we formed up a 100-man guard and went to the United Nations Cemetery in Yokohama and laid a wreath there. That was kind of memorable. Our Prime Minister at the time, Louis Saint-Laurent, was there for that occasion. And, in my entire career, I had served in the Far East, out of Korea, Japan, and I'm still in the Navy 30 years later. And we went back, and this is the first time I went back after 30 years of being in the Navy and not going there. And that was quite an experience to see the changes that were taking place, especially, well, and when we went to Japan, we went to South Korea, we went to Hong Kong. The changes that took place in 30 years were unbelievable. And 30 years later, we went with a group of ships, and one of the things we were going to be doing in Korea was parading a guard and going to the cenotaph, to the to the Canadian section of the United Nations Cemetery in Seoul, or Busan, South Korea, Busan. And that was quite an experience in itself. I think there were three ships that we formed, a 100-man guard in Busan, and they had buses to transport us through the city to the cemetery. And when we went through the city, they lined the streets and cheered us as we went through. They knew we were coming and what we were going to be doing. The cemetery we went to was beautiful. It was on a long slope, and it was assigned to all of the United Nations countries that took part in Korea. So every so often you'd see a flag of the country, and so ours was about the middle of this long slope. And it was really impressive to parade a 100-man guard. The Naden Band was flown down to take part in that. And the fact that it was 30 years ago, the Korean War had stopped, but there was still only a truce. They didn't have peace. Still a truce to this day. And so they asked those that had served in Korea to be at a place of honor in front of the guard and that. And so there was four of us still serving that had served in Korea. And I was proud to be one of those four. And as I was standing facing the guard of honor, and there was quite a few spectators and ship's company at my feet, I just happened to look down at this headstone at my feet. Here was a fellow from my hometown that I had known. I didn't join up with him, but I knew him. And he was a World War II veteran. He had served in Europe. And when the Korean War came, well, he got out after the end of World War II. When the Korean War came, he joined up again. And he went over there and he lost his life. So that was a memorable thing to have. Took a picture of it. Took a picture of his headstone. And
do you remember his name?
Yeah, his name was McPhail.
McPhail?
Yeah. And I was amazed at how many of my friends that joined the army and went over in Korea. Some of them were First Nations, some not. And I go back there and I looked them up, and quite a few of them have passed on.
What was it like joining as an Aboriginal person, joining the Navy?
It was kind of hard to put up with racism. I decided I would not make an issue out of being First Nations. I went out of my way to avoid a confrontation with racism. And for the most part I was successful, but I did run into it. And a lot of times you have to throw the gauntlet and challenge somebody, you know, if they want to be racism, you're going to have to, you know. But it was there all through my career. And it's still there to this day. and it's hard for me to live. It wasn't bad when I was younger. It wasn't bad. Like it bothers me a lot now, because it's still there and it's mean and it's nasty. I've got a couple of issues right now that I'm having a hard time to deal with. I'm supporting First Nations in my church and in my community. And when I get confronted with racism, I have a hard time dealing with it. I don't know how to deal with it. And I was wondering if there's an outlet where I could get support in dealing with it. How do I deal with it? How do I handle out and out hatred and racism against First Nations? And I see what's happening to the First Nations women. And, you know, if it's bad for me, it's 10 times as bad for them. And children. It's so painful to know what they experience in racism. And so I'm very supportive of First Nations women. I'm supportive of women in general. But you know, First Nations women are... How long have we been?
We've been here for a bit. We're you worried about your parking?
I think I've got lots of time.
Okay.
For my meter.
Okay. Did you want to take a break?
Yeah, I just wanted to show you. You probably are aware of that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I am. Thank you. I think this is still going. Yeah.
And we're having a meeting coming up.
Just pause this for a second.